Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Jay Posner, sports editor for the Union Tribune. I am in Washington for the Juan Soto, Josh Bell reunion. Jay, I felt like I had to mention Josh Bell. The Juan Soto reunion, Nationals, very odd. It was 10 days ago that he was playing for the Nationals. But I think this is a huge road trip for the Padres because of who they're playing. And, let's go from there, Jay. What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, they have what, six games on this trip, three against the Nationals, who are just horrible.
It's not even close. The worst record in the major leagues, not right. Even close.
Worst record in the major leagues, and they had Juan Soto and Josh Bell playing for them before. Although you just know Luke Voit is going to do something this weekend. You can just feel it at some point. And then three against the Marlins. Alcantara will pitch in one of those games, I did notice. So that was a little bit of a rough break for the Padres. But still, six games against teams much worse than they are. We've talked all year, got to take care of business against these kind of teams. I think I haven't looked up the record, but I think for the most part they've done that. It looked a little shaky against the Giants last week. Early on, lost the game on Monday. We're down on Tuesday. I think we're down twice on Wednesday. So, they scored 20 runs in their last 14 at bats against the Giants. And as you wrote in the newsletter yesterday, and we ran it in print today, this was they now have the dudes in the lineup to make that kind of thing happen. It makes what happened in those other previous games, especially the 26 inning scoreless streak, just all the more mind-boggling. But they're all big, Kevin. They're all big, but they definitely need to not get caught up in whatever emotion there is this weekend and go from there. And it's good you mentioned Josh Bell. People watching live can go there now, and obviously anybody hearing it later. But I just posted a 3,200-word Q&A that our friend Annie Halbrun did.
All with you Josh. Ever wanted to know.
A lot of interesting stuff in there, especially as someone who golfs now. He went to high school with a rather famous golfer. So you will have to read that to find out who it is. And it will also be in print on Sunday for those subscribers. So anyway, there's the plug.
You mentioned it. The 26 innings without a run, and then you go back to the last 14 innings, right? That's what I believe it is.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's not going to be like it was the 14 innings because that's virtually impossible.
Yeah.
And then, but that the bigger thing is what you said, the 26 innings without scoring a run. It happens, but like, wow. I mean, it was mind-boggling. Like, you just knew. We've been saying that. Like, we said it the last half of last year. Oh, this offense will come around. We said it the first half of this year. Oh, this offense will come around. But like, this time we really meant it. Because what they did, they got Juan Soto, for goodness sake, and he has been every bit of the player through eight games that you expected. What could you have said? Oh, I wish he'd hit one more or two more home runs. The guy's been on base at a .500 clip. He hit that home run. He has come up big, except for during that 26 inning stretch. I think there was a couple times he grounded out. Oh, no. But it was wow. We really meant it. So, I mean, we all should just feel really vindicated that we were spot on, that this lineup was capable of producing runs.
No, you're right. And, I mean, they picked up, and not just Soto, but they picked up Bell, who has not hit for any power yet, but has several base hits. Brandon Drury, who had the big hit the first game that these guys all played, the Grand Slam, and then had two home runs taken away from him. I think one by the Rockies and one by the Giants. The Rockies catch was incredible. I thought Yastrzemski's catch. I mean, you don't want to say, oh, that was just a routine catch. But if there was ever like a routine ball that you could say that was a routine rob there, it was kind of routine. But Drury had a monstrous hit on Wednesday. You know, the Padres had fallen behind early 4-0. They'd come back to take the 6-4 lead. Then Beal Chrismat was unable to hold that in, you know, not all his fault, but some. And all of a sudden they're down 7-6 and two outs. And, you know, not out of nothing, you know, they got a couple guys on and Drury hit the big home run. And it snowballed from there. But, I mean, Drury's hit was In fact, I saw somewhere where like it was the biggest hit of the day in terms of, you know, sort of changing win probability.
Okay.
The Padres, yeah, I think, were like 30-something percent to win the game when he came to the plate, and they were 83% after the home run. I mean, it was a really big, really big home run, and they were able to to make that hold up by adding on. So that, yeah, we got a very good indication of what this offense can be. The Giants bullpen is not very good, but look, they're going, look what the Nationals are this week. Corey Abbott, who's, you know, I'm sure he's a very nice guy. He went to school very near where I am right now, at what is now Canyon Hills High School. So he will start tonight, but, you know, I don't think he throws fear in too many people's heart. Anibal Sanchez has been as bad as you would expect him to be after not pitching for a couple of years. He pitches tomorrow. And tell me who pitches Sunday. Was it Lopez, I think?
Sorry, Jay, but when Jeff Sanders told me who was pitching, I immediately tuned it out. I was curious because I didn't realize Anibal Sanchez was pitching again. So right, that one I remembered. And Corey Abbott, I remember. I tuned it out because that's how much the Padres should own this series. Like,
sorry, Paulo Espino pitches on 35 years old with 80 games of experience. So that'll tell you.
There you go.
Tell you something. He got drafted in 2006, and he's pitched in 80 big league games. So he gets credit for hanging around. I'm in
absolute awe of this man. But I also think that the Padres should score 10 runs. And I'm exaggerating, as I am exaggerating by saying that, you know, they should go 5-1. I'm going to give them Sandy Alcantara. That's what I'm going to do, right? But no, really. Like, not exaggerating. They should go 5-1.
They should.
It's not all over. But
right,
the Nationals are terrible, and the Marlins are not good. Now, you know, we'll see.
The Nationals did win 2 out of 3 against the Dodgers not long ago, and I don't think the Dodgers have lost since. I don't know if I quite have that lined up, but I kind of remember it was in that same time frame. So that's how mad the Dodgers got after after that. I'm not sure the Dodgers are ever going to lose again, actually, the way that every time I turn the game on, it seems like they have 8 runs.
It can feel like that sometimes with their relentlessness. Yeah. And what we saw the last 2 games, in terms of the production, maybe not the way it went down, because truthfully, the Padres didn't pitch very great, and, you know, worse than that, in the second game, they didn't play great defense. But
right,
what this offense is able to do makes it look like, oh, yeah, they're fine.
And that was a weird offensive game because all the runs came – they batted around twice in a game, which, you, as you know, your scorebook almost never gets that messed up. But they batted around twice in the same game, and those were the only innings in which they scored. So it was a little bit odd. But, you know, the bottom line is they scored 13 runs. You're going to win most games when you score 13 runs.
And everybody got a hit. You don't need necessarily that particular stat, but everybody scored a run. You don't need that particular stat. But the fact is, that's the lineup that they have been trying to sell us that they have. And I don't think they really believed it, because at the same time, they're acknowledging that maybe now what's great about it is you don't feel the pressure. Oh, but I thought you guys didn't feel the pressure before. So we all knew that they did. Even Manny Machado, who will rarely give anything, at one point this past week said, you know, it's easier on me. I'm paraphrasing. But that's basically what he said. And the truth is, since Juan Soto came, Manny Machado, he's not getting more fastballs in the zone. He's not getting more strikes, you know, pitches in the zone. He's hitting them. Right? He's chasing fewer pitches out. Huh. I wonder what that could be. Oh, he doesn't feel like he has to be that guy. Juan Soto's on before him. He batted behind him one time. There's more guys in the lineup. Now, we knew Manny was going to pull out of that, whatever it was, 179 stretch of 20 games. But I do not, absolutely, based on those metrics, do not think that it was coincidence. So this is the kind of lineup that they thought they had. To me, Brandon Drury was a huge pickup. Look, on his own, if that's their pickup, Jay, the first words out of your mouth would have been Adam Frazier, Ryan Ludwig. But
it would have been. I hope this guy is not those guys because
that would have been the thought.
Better, but it certainly would have crossed your mind.
But here's a guy who now you want to talk about what this guy does, and it sounds ridiculous that I'm making a big deal out of Brandon Drury when you got Juan Soto and you got Josh Bell, but Will Myers can start or not start, and can bat down in the lineup. Heck, Jake Cronenworth can get a day off. You guys notice where Jake Cronenworth is batting because Brandon Drury and those other guys are in the lineup. Yeah. It changes. Getting Brandon Drury was their attempt, their latest attempt, and probably their best, since they also got Juan Soto and Josh Bell, to become the Dodgers lineup. That it was just monstrous what getting Brandon Drury did.
Right, and your story talked about that in terms of lengthening the lineup. And what that means, and look, first of all, Brandon Drury. I mean, I know he played in Cincinnati, but he has 22 home runs this year. That's a pretty good number. It's a pretty good pickup for that. And as we said, he's had at least two that we know of that have been taken away. But you talked in the story about the lineup being lengthened, and you know when you're able to hit Cronenworth sixth. That's a pretty good thing. And the thing is, he might drop down another spot, you know, because when Tatis comes back, I'm assuming that's going to happen at some point since he's now playing in the minors. And maybe if it doesn't happen this weekend, hopefully Monday in Miami.
We'll talk about that.
But we'll get to that. But anyway, whenever Tatis comes back, that's another guy that you're going to throw in there. Now, I think we talked a little bit on here about what do you do with Tatis. I would lead him off and go Tatis, Soto, Machado, Bell, and then Drury. And then you have either Profar and Cronenworth hitting 6 and 7. Those guys were hitting 1 and 2, 1 and 3, 1 and 4 for a good chunk of the season. They're going to be your 6 and 7 guys on a lot of in a lot of games. And, you know, then down at the bottom, whoever you have, and you mentioned this in the story, you know, Austin Nola hit leadoff a couple times this year. Jorge Alfaro hit cleanup a few times this year. Those guys are basically going to be hitting 8th and 9th now the rest of the year, depending on what you want to. If, you know, sometimes there's some thought you could put Grisham in the 9th spot just because of what that does to flipping over the lineup. Maybe Ha-Sung Kim, the days he plays, he's 9th in the lineup. But anyway, Alfaro and Nola are going to be at the very bottom of the lineup, and they were like key guys early in the year. It just shows what a difference, you know, getting these guys. I mean, you're basically getting half of a lineup back once Tatis comes, because you add Tatis, Drury, Bell, and Soto. That's 4 guys that you're putting in, you know, to a lineup. And now you're talking, now it looks like more like what the Dodgers have.
Yes, and that was the thing. You know, I was just about to write the story of, I swear this is a good lineup. I swear they're, like, they're not lying. They lengthened the lineup and say exactly what I said there, but they just, you know, it's going to change. It has to, because you can't possibly with this is exactly what you wanted. And I love Jake Cronenworth. And when Jake Cronenworth is on, he is one of the, you can make the argument that on day-to-day, on certain days, he was the biggest guy on this team because of just the things that he creates and that what he does and the way he plays defense and all this. I mean, he is a fantastic player. But this year, batting second, that's, you know, that it's especially glaring when the other guys aren't doing well. But batting sixth, seventh, oh my gosh. Well, there's a reason for that, because you have these other good guys. So, I mean, I just, you know, what we've gone on long enough about it. But to me, it was gratifying. But it was like, oh, okay, finally. Like, that's what it was. It was a lengthened lineup, because everybody got hits. Your 6, your 7 guy. And that, all you have to do is watch a Padres-Dodger game. That's what kills you a lot. Yes, Mookie Betts gets on. Yes, Freddie Freeman and Trey Turner. But, wow, look at that. Their number 8 hitter, whatever guy that is that day. Their number 9 hitter, Cody Bellinger.
Well, of course, the thing is that the Dodger guys down at the bottom of the lineup really have bad numbers, except when they play the Padres, then Max Muncy hits a home run and Cody Bellinger hits 2 home runs. And of course, you knew, and then Joey Gallo hit a home run the other night. So in a way, the Padres, you would think in terms of numbers, would actually have a better lineup all the way through. I'm not sure if you know how you would rate some of it at the top. The Dodgers top 4 is pretty good as well when you have Betts, Trey Turner, Freddie Freeman, and Will Smith up there. So, you know, look, it would be a, if the teams end up playing in the postseason, I mean, they're going to play nine times in September. If they end up playing in the postseason, it's going to be a, you know, sort of a colossal series. And I think everybody would look forward to that. And then if you win, you might probably only have to face Scherzer and DeGrom in the next series. But anyway, we're getting way,
well, it
way
all depends on where they finish too, right?
That's
now,
true.
The Padres are what? I didn't, I'll be honest with you. I slept yesterday. I don't know if the Brewers played. So I'm not sure if they're a game or a game and a half or a half a game up on the Brewers. But anyway, the Padres right now are shooting to be the number four seed, which would, yeah, if you win that series, you would host that series. And if you win that, then yes, you would end up playing the Dodgers. If you're the number six seed or the five seed, you're going to end up playing the Mets in your, presumably the Mets, the winner of the East in your second series. But regardless, got to get through the Dodgers. Oh, first up, got to make it to the playoffs.
And they are a game ahead of the Brewers, but
okay, they didn't play yesterday.
The Brewers are actually a game ahead of them in the all-important loss column.
Indeed.
So there is that. The Phillies have 49 losses. The Brewers have 50, the Padres have 51. So this is really, you know, it's going to be a race with those four teams, although the Brewers and Cardinals are, you know, are together in there. But one of those teams is going to miss the playoffs. So the Padres, as we talked about, this is the kind of trip they need to pile up wins against teams like this. So when later on they're playing, you know, when they're playing the Dodgers, that they have a little, cushion. And then they, you know, they come home and get the Indians, the Washington for four, and the Guardians for two, and then get to play the Royals and Giants again. So this is, as we've talked about before, big stretch here. Got off to a good start by winning two out of three against the Giants. Now they have to do at least that again. I mean, look, if they don't sweep the Nationals, it's going to be, everybody's going to think, wow, this was, they really let one get away, or however many they let get away. But if it comes to that, Fernando Tatis, what is the latest?
Well, won't be here. Don't think it'll be Miami. So Washington, can't imagine it goes beyond Washington, just because. I mean, that's a week away. So, or 6 days away. They
Jose Castillo's been on rehab for, no, I know he's not there anymore, on rehab anymore, but.
Yeah, they, listen, it's Fernando Tatis Jr. They're playing the Marlins and the not that I even know that matters, but they're playing the Nationals and the Marlins. They want to make sure when he comes back that he can play. The fact is he's been down there now for, it'll be a week tomorrow, and today I think will be his fifth game. Okay. So
sounds right. And he still hasn't been able to play center field because it keeps raining.
Right. So
down there.
Maybe have him put together three games in a row. That might be a, you know, kind of a big deal. But then three games in a row, and then you probably want to give him a day off before he plays in the majors, because once you come up here, you probably want to play a couple of days in a row. So if you start to think like that, then it's like, I have gotten a lot of feedback from people of, wait, this is Tatis. Okay, you know, he's still human. You know, he still has gotten hurt before and has slumped before. Look, I have as much confidence as anyone that when this guy comes back, he's going to be Fernando Tatis Jr. You know, a lot of guys come back from injury and you think, well, maybe it'll take him a while. I'd be real surprised if it takes Fernando a while to make something happen. And by the way, you watch Juan Soto play, you watch Juan Soto interact with his teammates, you throw Fernando Tatis Jr. in there, this has the capability of being like just the most exciting time to watch the Padres any of us.
Right.
Been alive, even you, Jay.
No, it's true. I mean, I think that, you know, you go back and the 98 team was a lot of fun to watch, and you sort of have to compare everything to that. And you know, I think there was a ton of talent on that team. The personality probably not as much as this one, but you know, a little more serious, especially if you had when Kevin Brown was pitching. You know, you had Tony Gwynn and Ken Caminiti and Greg Vaughn and Steve Finley. I mean, that's pretty good, pretty good lineup to Wally Joyner was in there to start with. Even a guy like Kilvio Varas, I remember, I think had about a 375 on base percentage that year or something like that. That was a fun team to watch. So, but this one is a little bit different, and you know, it still has to do something. You know, that team went to the World Series. This team hasn't even been together yet. The missions where Fernando Tatis is right now are in Frisco for three more games this weekend, tonight, tomorrow night, and Sunday night. Then they have an off day on Monday, and they play Tuesday and Wednesday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday down there. So I don't know what they'll, you know, what they'll do in terms of Tatis. Maybe if all goes well, maybe he tries to play Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then you see how he's doing at that point. But I'm just guessing at this stage. But it will be fun to see him back. And hopefully at least it's by next weekend when the Padres are back in town. And I'm sure that will make what's already been a pretty wild atmosphere for a couple of these games at Petco, you know, even more so. When Tatis comes back. I mean, I still, you know, that first game where they announce a lineup and you have, as I said, if I was doing it, you have Tatis, Soto, and Machado hitting 1-2-3. That has the potential to sort of liven things up. Maybe people even go sit in their seats at the beginning of the game instead of waiting in line for, you know, food and $15 beers. But I'll believe that when I see it. You can never tell a crowd. I always laugh when writers tweet pictures of crowds in the first inning or at kickoff or something like that. It's like, if you ever go to a game and sit in the stands, you'll know why the stands are not full when the game starts. So, you know, and it's not just Dodger Stadium where it happens. The Padres, if you look at Petco, the third inning is usually when you can really tell what the crowd is going to be. And you know, a lot of that are people out on the concourses, because I've been out there. And
if you look out at the first pitch and the upper bowls are almost full, like there's just the little swaths of it, and you look around, you go, oh, this is going to be a sellout tonight.
Exactly.
You know, if you see a lot of people, but the berm out there in the park isn't totally full, but there's a lot, you go, okay, this is going to be a sellout tonight, because you know that it's going to fill in. And next thing you know, then I forget about it. And I look up in the third or whatever, and I go, wow. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
But it has been, especially the first game that Soto, Bell, and Drury were there, but it has been a little bit more of it's kind of an anticipation.
Yes.
Of people even wanting to watch, it appears to me, Soto run on the field before the game and that sort of thing. It and the relationship that has developed quickly, like right away, between him and the people in right field. And I would look forward to a full season of that, where it becomes even like more of a thing, right? And can you imagine now suddenly if when he's in center and Soto's in right, those are the best seats in the house that you got there out at the party deck and the barrel deck, whatever all those are called. Those are, wow. That's a lot of star power.
You still couldn't get me to sit out there during a day game, though.
Whew, that's a lot of sun.
That is a lot of sun out there, but you're right. I mean, it is a lot of fun, and I think people, you know, are certainly enjoying it. And you look at and even think about next year and having, you know, those three guys at the top of the lineup for hopefully an entire season. It could be a lot of fun. So,
we got here is Clevinger, Darvish, and Soto. Soto, I just can't stop.
He's always on your mind.
Clevinger, Darvish, and Snell going against the Nationals. I'll say that Mike Clevinger has pretty much cleaned up on inferior teams since he's been back. So that's you feel good about that.
He pitched well against a good team last time, except, you know, he made that one or two bad pitches. But yeah, at times against the Dodgers, he looked really, really good.
Yep.
In that game. And the Darvish is, I think, has had six straight quality starts.
Many of them, at least three of them, seven innings. So is that right?
Right. Yeah. Right. And although the Padres are only 3-3 in those six games. So I'm looking at, Jeff just sent me his on deck, for Saturday's game. So I'm reading off this, Sanchez has made five starts since coming back this year, pitched 25 innings and allowed eight home runs, and a 922 OPS. So all right. He'll probably throw four scoreless before the Padres get to him. But you will think that, unlike some past years, you think that they'll actually at some point get around to getting at him. And then, yeah, Paulo Espino will pitch against Snell on Sunday, and then that leaves Musgrove and Manaea to open the Marlins series next week in Miami. And we will do a show on Monday next week when you are in Miami. It'll be our only show of the week, so we'll have to make it a good one.
Oh boy! All right, I'll prepare for that one. All right. Hey, that's about all we got. We talked a lot of offense. We'll see what's happening with the bullpen. Again, this should be a get well time for everybody. All right. So batting averages, non-base percentages, and slugging percentages should go up, and some ERA should come down, because you know who you're not facing? You're not facing Josh Bell and Juan Soto this weekend. So.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Kevin, enjoy it. Tonight should be a good time there. Really interested to see how the crowd reacts and everything to Soto. I would think they'd be very welcoming and should make for a good game. And unfortunately, two of the three games this weekend are only streaming. Apple TV Plus tonight, although that is free. Anybody can watch that. I think you just have to sign up. But you
and that's the one with the incredible picture, right?
Incredible picture.
It's unreal.
Yeah, incredible picture. So I will. Sometimes those early games I watch in the office here on my iPad, but with the
can
Apple game.
Can you sync up like we used to do? Like, can you sync up like the radio, listen to Jesse and Tony with the Apple, or does it like there a delay and it doesn't work?
I don't know if that's workable or not, but I'm definitely getting out in the den for the big screen on Apple TV today,
man.
and then Peacock on Sunday morning. I mean, the worst thing about that, Kevin, is it interferes with Chelsea Tottenham.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
How about the worst thing about that is I'm going to be up for for the clubhouse before a 12 p.m. Eastern time start. So
off of a 7:10 game the night before. That's really great scheduling there that they
did. Those are rough.
Yeah. Anyway, that's life on the road, Kevin. I'm sure you got your sleep yesterday, so that should take care of you for a while.
I got my sleep for August. Thank you.
That's it. Have a good weekend, everyone. We'll talk to you on Monday.
Thanks, everybody.